on today's episode of the Law of Tech podcast.
One of the things that we get with our product when we're showing new people the core of the system is how. Their sort of mind gets, you know, flabbergasted, and they don't understand the how of how we do it. And the truth is that it's not particularly important for them to understand, because it is probably complex and certainly on the technical side. But those are the misconceptions of whether something can be done in the first place is part of what you have to get over to understand that we can build them what they need.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Law of Tech podcast's Legal Tech Startup Spotlight. I'm your host, Alessa Drukarch, and my co-host, Marco Mendola.
Hey, hey, Alessa, nice to be here. Hello, everyone.
It's great to have you with me, Marco, also on this special episode, where we're actually welcoming back one of our guests in season two of the show, which is Nicole Clark, co-founder and CEO at Trellis, a US-based legal research and litigation legal tech company. So I want to welcome you back to the show, Nicole. We're super excited to have you. And let's see where this conversation goes this time.
So great to be back. Thanks, guys.
But before we delve deeper into the topic of this episode, a quick word from our sponsor, BettyBlocks. Are you looking for a way to create solutions that will make legal processes faster, easier, and more efficient? Do you want to offer the best client experience with great digital services? Well, look no further than our sponsor for this episode, BettyBlocks. Rapidly build custom legal tech applications such as legal intake portals, ESG assessments without a single line of code. Start building your own solutions today with BettyBlocks. Now, to kick off the episode, like I briefly mentioned at the beginning of our chat just now, even though we've had a chat before, I think it would be great to do a little personal introduction and to hear more about Trellis as a starting point so we can follow through the discussion based on that point of introduction. So I'll hand the mic to you to tell a bit more about yourself, what your professional background is, and more about Trellis.
Absolutely. So I am Nicole Clark, CEO, co-founder of Trellis. Prior to Trellis, I was a litigator. For a number of years, I practiced a lot of employment, a lot of class action work. So I was in state trial court constantly. And I just really couldn't believe how difficult it was to access state court data. Absent Trellis, this is data that's stuck on thousands of individual county court websites. And so born out of that frustration, Trellis was born. And what we do is we go after that very difficult, very fragmented data. We go county by county, we aggregate that data, structure it, normalize it, and then make it searchable from a single interface. So the US state trial court system, searchable from a single interface. And then, of course, layer analytics on top of that data for attorneys.
Thank you very much for that introduction. And I love how we spoke to you last year, like I mentioned at the beginning of this episode, and heard a lot about what Trellis was doing, where it actually came from. Like you said, it was built up on the foundation and the issue that state trial court data was not accessible, that you experienced that. Mm-hmm. What I've heard from our discussions prior to this episode and preparation for this episode is that a lot has changed at Trellis. You've seen massive expansion of the company, new products, new services, new everything, basically. Yeah. So we're excited to hear how things have changed since last year when we spoke. What's new? What's upcoming? What's going on?
such a broad question with so many new things. So yeah. Certainly team has grown dramatically. Our customer base has grown dramatically. We have thousands and thousands of customers at this point. We have so many new products that have already released or are releasing that I'm excited to tell you a little bit more about. And, our coverage. So we have probably, since last year, at least 15 or 20 more states, which makes hundreds and hundreds, if not, you know, close to 1,000 new counties. So we're continuing to go really aggressively after the data. We're now 30 states, and that's just what's released right now. We're really close with another 7 more for this year.
Wow, that's very exciting. The goal is, I'm assuming, to reach all of them.
That's the goal, and do it as quickly as possible.
That's very nice. I'm also curious, before we actually dig deeper into, well, the types of clients that you have, mm-hmm. who's interested in the platform, and also what's new in terms of the products. You started off with, well, based on the problem that state trial data wasn't accessible, that was very problematic. You've seen growth in this area. You've seen that, well, you've been able to expand the mm-hmm. company to more states. Has there been a shift in the approach towards accessibility of state court trial data in other states that you haven't reached yet? Like, has mentality shift occurred?
No, not yet. And I don't expect it to move very quickly in terms of the real problem with it being sort of institutionalized on the county side or on the state side is that it's local government at its finest. So it's not the, on the federal side, making a mandate. It's not the state itself creating legislature. But each county gets to decide. It's the democracy, and they decide exactly how they want to make their data available, if they want to make it available, to what extent. And so because there's such variation there and so many different thousands of sort of individual decision makers at the county level, I don't mm-hmm. expect there to be moving very quickly any sort of large change. What has happened is we've gotten better at accessing the data in any format, by any means. And so we're able to continue to move more quickly, but I don't expect there to be a landslide movement from the county side to make the data more accessible to the public.
Which brings me to the point, of course, you mentioned that you've been working on new products. You also have new ones releasing soon. And on the other hand, the client perspective, Mao, at the beginning of this like brief discussion before we actually started recording, you said it would be nice to look at or to approach this episode from the perspective of those that are going to use your service, that use the platform, and then take a look at what are you offering. So I think maybe we could split this up, take a step back, and take a look at who are you addressing. What persona would you build?
Yes.
Or personas would you build if you would describe those using Trellis?
So it's going to be anyone who has litigation in the state court system. And that can range from small plaintiffs firms to large AM defense firms to legal departments, large corporations that often get sued in state courts as well. And from their perspective, what they're dealing with is usually a multitude of suits in different counties or different states across the nation, where in order to get any access, they're trying to find a county court website and navigate to where, if they know a case number, they're able to pull up some information about a case. Now, on the one hand, just very, very simply as a core of our product, what do? Well, we make that much easier. You're not having to navigate multiple county court websites. You don't have to know the case number. You can get to all the case information by one of the parties' names or by the legal issue. So find cases that you otherwise didn't even know existed. You can also pull all the documents on our site and make that much easier and hopefully much cheaper than doing so on a county court site. That's just a starting place. If you need to access the actual docket of the case that you're on and the documents of the case, we make that much easier, much more simple, much more intuitive. But that's the sort of core. There's so much strategy that you can do if you have additional data there. And so let's talk a little bit about some of that strategy for the core of our product. So you have a case now. And what are some of the basics? You have opposing counsel that are going against you on the case. You have a judge that you've been assigned to. Well, part of what we offer is the ability to research that judge in a way that's never been possible before. So this is your judge. Have they ruled on your case dispositive issue in the past? What is the crux of this matter? And look at their rulings and understand exactly how they've treated this matter. Now you've got an understanding about litigation strategy from the start. Look at your judge and see motions that you're likely to write before this judge, and how have they ruled on those in the past? Zoom out and look at the analytics of the judge. How many cases do they have? How busy? How long do cases take? All the way down to how they rule on very specific pretrial motions. So getting both the analytics of your judge as well as the context, actual cases, actual filings, documents, and their rulings, together you can formulate a really strong strategy that is tailored to your judge. Now, mm-hmm. there's other pieces of the case, like opposing counsel. Well, the same way you should research your judge, you should do the same with opposing counsel, and we make that possible. So who is your opposing counsel? Every opposing counsel that you research, you can either search them by name or they'll be listed on the case. And if you click on them, you're searching all their other litigation. Now, what are the types of cases that they have? How many cases do they have? Do they settle cases? Do they take them to trial? So these are the questions that you can now actually answer, that before you're sending around emails to your folks internal in your firm to try and source some of this information. And then doing the same thing as judges, dig into their motions. How do they actually position similar issues? Well, now you know how they're going to argue the case. And so be super strategic from the start. So those are some of the core basics for case-specific research. But then you have the motion drafting part of it, right? At the state court level, you're drafting motions all the way through. The case is likely going to settle. But what are you doing? You're lobbying motions back and forth in order to leverage a better settlement. And drafting those motions and winning them is how you leverage that better settlement. And so understanding, using not only something that the attorney has drafted before, which is what everyone is working from, or something that someone in their firm has drafted, you've now got the entire state trial court system and all of the motions filed to use to find something that's not only directly on point, but something that's been successful before. And now use that as an outline. So save hours, not only save hours on motion drafting, but be more persuasive, actually win. And then finally, another core part of the product is the alerting functionality. I am the attorney on this case. I want to get notified first if something in this case changes. As well as, these are a list of my clients. I want to get notified if any one of them gets sued, and I want to be first to tell them rather than some other firm coming in and saying, hey, litigate.
By the way,
let me be the one so that I can really keep that relationship strong. And so that's some of the core of what the product is and the value props that we've built upon. Now, we have new products that we've launched recently over the last year as well. So for that, what we've done, the core, is add additional coverage. Those same functionalities now across more states, across more counties. But some of the additional things that we've built, one is daily filings reports. So this is some law firms, some attorneys like to be, they litigate in specific areas and they just want to know what are the cases being filed there on a daily basis in case there's something interesting to them. So we give them, per the jurisdictions that they're interested, the list of all the cases that have been filed the day before, but now with links to everything, including links to the complaint, so that they can actually go in. And when they click on the case, it's a link to the actual document of the case. So it's not just sort of high level information, but they can go in and find more information because that's the core of what we provide. Some of the other products that we have launched, court comparison analytics. So instead of just judge analytics, now you can do the same thing, except you're comparing counties against each other. So different county courts, where might you want to file a particular case? What does Los Angeles County look like against San Francisco, against San Diego? Who takes longer? What are the types of cases? How busy are they? What's the case length? So understanding a lot of that information with comparing up to three courts against each other.
With the goal of, I'm assuming, choosing a court that would be in your favor most or would be most beneficial to you to have your case.
That is correct. There's two. One would be that, right? You're trying to find the venue that you think is going to be the best forum for your client. The other is you're stuck in a venue that you haven't been in before. Let's learn a little bit about it so we can set our own expectations, so we can set the client's expectations on what this might look like compared to some of the other venues that you're more used to. Especially if it's going to be difficult. You really always want to work on managing that relationship instead of things going a little off the rails and you having to figure out why and discuss it later.
I think this is absolutely fascinating, Nicole, because not just about, well, I'm impressed at the same time. It's not new of the, you know, the extreme capacity of technology, AI tools. So I definitely follow you. What I wanted to ask you, if possible, And to be honest, I think it's a bit of an unfair question, but I ask you anyways, because we don't have the possibility to actually show the dashboard or your services, but potentially we could maybe in a supporting material article. But what I'm trying to say, going back to the user centricity point, right? Because obviously your system generates a huge amount of data and combination of factors and dots, kind of like a hub system. If I understand correctly, all the data and the users will be mostly potentially lawyers working in law firms. So that should be at least a typical persona. Yeah. So my question is, can you tell us a bit more about your design thinking methodology approach, if you have one, or how your research department interacts with eventual feedback from your persona? Because you know better than me that then once you have data, you need to establish a narrative or a selection. Can you shed some light on this?
Absolutely. And you're right, that is one of the most important things. Okay, so the way that we try and design anything before it's built, first, before we build anything new, we show the designs to current customers, we walk them through, and we ask them, does that make sense to you? What do you wish it could do? If you had a magic wand, what would you want this to do? And whether it's technically possible or not, we want to understand, because we may not yet, and oftentimes we don't. And it's great to hear different ideas. But when we design anything, the core is sort of, how obvious is this? How intuitive is this? And the basic core of the product, before we talk about any new and additions that we've made, is sort of like Google. We really try and make it be where if you know how to use Google, you're going to understand the basis of our site from the start. It is a large search bar. And then we show you some of the different ways to search. And then you get search results. And then you can sort them and those, you know, different, but as intuitive as possible. And that is one of the feedback that we get often is, wow, this is so much easier on your site. And so everything is built sort of around that. What would someone expect this to do? And then try and make it actually do that. So for one of the things is, for every case, the case is kind of a docket of the case. Just so for those who don't know, a docket of a case is kind of a timeline of events in a case. It's what you would find on a county court website about a case, starting from when the complaint is filed, reverse chronological order for everything that's happened in the case. We use that as part of our home base for the case, where everything else sort of feeds into. So all the documents of the case you can find on the docket page. They all also have individual pages, but everything will be on that docket. If you're looking for the parties of the case, they live on the docket page, but they also live in the metadata on all the individual pages as well. So everything is both individual, but as well as a home base of the docket to always get back to the core of the case that you need to. We separate the analytics out so that it's not on the search results page. It's in a separate analytics section. And there you just search your judge by last name. So really trying to make everything as intuitive as possible. And in terms of getting feedback from customers, we get a lot. And that's actually great. I think one of the difficult things in law, especially early on with the company, was getting some of that feedback from customers. Lawyers aren't used to technology iterating. And they aren't used to being able to be a part of that process. And so having them understand in the first place that technology can get better, help us, right? This is not a final product, is actually a big thing to overcome when you are an early startup in legal tech. But we've done that now because they've seen so many iterations of our product that they know that we can change things. And so we get lots of feedback. So now the problem isn't getting the feedback. It's how we prioritize what to do.
Wow, you are in a perfect, that's music to my ears. First, lawyers by background are happy to receive feedback, also constructive criticize one, so fantastic.
Yes.
And second, you have enough. So you're in a pretty good position, let me say.
So now part of it is, okay, we've heard that piece of feedback once. Have we heard it more than once? And then we start to sort of gather together what our highest priority, because we can tell, because we've heard it more than once, because it makes sense for making the product better, and then prioritizing how we fit that in with the current engineering team that's also doing a bunch of new stuff, that's also bringing in new data. So there's a lot of pieces competing for each other. But we push new releases on our product daily. Daily, we have new things going out.
You touched upon a misconception, I think, of what lawyers may think or legal professionals that make use of the Trello system may have thought, actually, when they started out. I'd love to hear more about something that we've really been enjoying to do more lately is ask about some of the misconceptions, not just to dwell on them, but to actually ask, okay, so why is it a misconception and why shouldn't it be one of them? Have you maybe got others that you like from your experience working with your clients and then working with your platform that you have come across?
Gosh, I think there's probably so many. Definitely on the core of software changing, I think that goes back to the legacy products in legal, which are Lexis and Westlaw. And there just being very little change there over 30 plus years. Now, do they buy and add, you know, new smaller startup products? Yes, but they're add-ons. They're not new pieces into the core of their product, and that's not iterating very often. And so coming to not understanding technology, and I feel like I even fell into this very early when I was starting the company. The idea that you can almost build anything is just such a powerful realization that at the beginning of starting the company, it sounded like magic, like some kind of black magic. What do you mean? I can tell you what I want something to do and it can be built? Like, that's just incredible. So helping folks understand that, I think one of the things that we get with our product when we're showing new people the core of the system is how. Their sort of mind gets, you know, flabbergasted, and they don't understand the how we do it. And the truth is it's not particularly important for them to understand, because it is probably complex and certainly on the technical side. but those are the misconceptions of whether something can be done in the first place is part of what you have to get over to understand that we can build them what they need.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Sometimes we've been asked, great, can you do this globally? Probably depends a little bit on the country, but also the answer is there's still so much to do in the United States.
Very true.
Let's first talk about that after we actually conquer this beast.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, because I mean, you said you are at around 30 states mm-hmm. now, right? Mm-hmm. So you still have quite a couple to go.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, like you said, you can divide it, like subdivide it into the counties. And I'm sure that within that, there's a lot of complexities and miscommunication and mismatches. Wow. I was also wondering, Trellis is built up on the, like I've mentioned now, I think this has become my standard thing to say when I ask a question, up on the idea that the data is not accessible. Yeah. Looking at it from a different perspective, accessibility to Trellis, mm-hmm. What do you do about that? Because I can imagine, like, listening to what you were saying about the amount of data that you make available to parties, that is super interesting to a party. Mm-hmm. But do all parties have access to Trellis? Is there a competitive advantage, disadvantage between parties going to court using Trellis? How do you address that potential risk or issue?
Thank you for asking that. And democratization of access to the data is actually core to the company and values that we build upon. So we have two ways that we think about. And if you think about it, using Lexis or Westlaw as an example, both sides are interested in that data. Whether you're on the plaintiff side or you're on the defense firm, that same data is valuable to both sides. Now, usually these are proxies, but usually the plaintiff is a small firm that has a smaller budget, and the defense firm is a large firm with large budgets. That's just a proxy. It may not always be the case. But using that, there is different buying power there, which means there could be unequal access to the data, which would then give a competitive advantage to the side with more money, which would be part of the entire problem of the US system in the first place. So what we do is, first of all, we want the data to be accessed by both sides, freely accessible by both. And the way that we do that is we have a product-led growth side of the business, which means individuals can sign up. Individual attorneys can sign up for the product on their own without talking to a human, and get going, and a basic sort of free trial model that is affordable for individual attorneys. So the way that works is usually they either know about us directly and come to our site, but many times they don't know yet. And so they start on Google, which is what many attorneys do. And so they'll Google their judge or their case or a lawyer, and they'll happen into our data because Google has found a lot of our data valuable and has ranked us highly. And because we have that freemium access, they can get a fair amount without deciding that it's valuable, you know, before they have to decide to put down a credit card, before they have to decide that this is important, and they can do the trial access to get themselves there with no risk. So small attorneys are able to sign up for sometimes under $100 a month, depending on the level of access that they're looking for. They can try it out for 2 weeks, confirm that it is going to be valuable for their practice, and then have a plan that is going to be right for them. We don't sell by user seat. So for that firm, if they have two paralegals that they want to have access as well, they can add them to their account. There's no additional cost to that. Now, on the large defense side, that's more of an enterprise sale. And so we treat those a little bit differently. And that's based on what ultimately is going to be the value of many, many attorneys utilizing the site on a daily basis. But we do have those two paths, and that has allowed us to grow in the thing that's actually very difficult for a startup to do, which is go after two different personas, both SMB and enterprise at the same time. And I don't recommend it for someone new. You should start out and choose one. But because we have that natural product-led growth side of the business, we've been able to do that. And it's been really valuable. It's been really, really valuable because we get to see, we have, I would say, in terms of number of customers, we have more SMBs. Now, in terms of revenue, it's more on the enterprise side. But the number of customers, we're helping all of those small firms as well. And that means a lot to us.
Yeah. Thank you for that answer. I think it's super important because I can imagine that just listening at this from the outset, you can ask these questions. And like, my goal is not to add controversial points to the discussion, but maybe adding a perspective.
It's mine. It's actually my role. I joke.
Usually it's your role. What has happened to me? Thanks, Marco. It's your fault. Because like looking at it then from yet another perspective, namely a judge's perspective in a court, I could imagine that they would be under the illusion that using Trellis by parties is almost a way of exploiting the gaps in the system or in the court system that exists right now. Because like I can imagine that they could say like, oh, you know, it seems like by, you know, parties getting access to all this data, even getting access to information about me as a judge, my judgments, the way I judge, the way I look at specific topics, they could reverse engineer like a whole case and figure out, okay, I'm just going to use or going to go this direction because I know that they will judge that way. I can imagine that that does two things. A, they may feel that the parties are misusing the court system. Mm-hmm. And B, they may feel that their job is becoming useless. What is the value of them acting a certain way? I guess that's the unique aspect of their job. The fact that it's not always clear what they're going to do.
Yes. And I think that there's a wide range of the way that judges may feel about this data being more accessible for the first time. What we've found is that one, the core of the First Amendment in the United States is sort of a flip side of two coins. One is the freedom to speak, and the other is the freedom to have access to information, particularly information that allows you to perform your civic duties. So the most free information is information in our judicial proceedings. That is the core of First Amendment. And so On the one hand, I think judges understand this, that having access to the political forum or to the judicial forum, I mean, is core and it's necessary, and that the states aren't doing a good job of that right now. The data is public, but it's not accessible. And that's really the difference. And so we're taking what is what everyone agrees is public data, and we're making it more accessible to the public who it belongs to in the first place. The other thing I would say about judges is on some hands, they find it interesting, right? I would like to see my own analytics and see where we also compare judges against the other judges in their county and the other judges in their state. And so they can see areas where they're outliers that they might want to just look into, do some internalization about whether they feel that's right, whether they want to work on that, whatever that means. But having the data themselves is how they can be better. We don't say one, we don't make do any opinions on judges. This judge is a bad judge. This is a good judge. We have no stake in that matter. We're simply really giving factual. People the data, the core of the data that exists, and they can make decisions based on that data.
Mm-hmm. And this is a super fascinating, again, topic to me, Nicole. So I would like to ask you a specific point. I'm definitely... I'm sure you obviously understand the power of data and how important it is to be sure that data don't frame and don't create alternative narratives, right? So you rightly said we don't get involved in kind of evaluations here. We don't provide kind of rankings based on any sort of factors. We provide the data in different with different trends. What I'm trying to ask is, how do you check in with yourself? So in other words, how your engineering team or legal team or risk management team, I'm sure you have your own internal way, how do you constantly check in with yourself to ensure that you deliver, you know, a top-notch product like you are? I'm sure you apply as some sort of overview check. Can you share something with us?
Sure. And you're absolutely right. I mean, there with this amount of data, particularly, there is just a lot to quality control and to make sure that the health of the data and everything is showing properly, particularly when we're giving people that data to make decisions on. So we have a large team. We also have a lot of checks and balances within the engineering department, especially even when something is accurate data, we go back and check it. So if this looks like an anomaly in comparison to other things, it may actually be true, but let's go and let's check it. Let's confirm with the data that that is. And so we're constantly monitoring and checking our own data because it is incredibly important to provide the accurate data to folks that are actually making decisions based on this data. Mm-hmm. The other thing about our data is that they can go in and double check themselves. So we have the source of what the analytics are based on. You can go into the judge and you can look at the judge's decisions and you can see, okay, well, with this amount of motions, these rulings went this way, that makes to around the percent that Trellis got to. Sometimes a little harder than that because judges often do partial rulings where they said yes on this and no on this. And so there's lots of fun there for sure. Yep. But we take very seriously always ensuring the accuracy of our data.
The fact that you're focusing so much on accuracy is an indication to those using it that, hey, okay, we're already being looked after. Now we just need to make sure we implement in a way that's good for our clients, that we make sure that, you know, we do it in a way that we want. But at least we know that the data is being looked after and the outcomes are being checked. So I think that's super valuable. Thank you for joining us. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Nicole. It was great.
Absolutely. Such a blast, guys.
Thank you. To learn more about Trellis, visit www.trellis.law today.
Thank you so much for tuning in to the Law of Tech podcast. If you want to make sure you keep up to date with the show and never miss out on an episode, be sure to subscribe on your podcast platform of choice and follow the Law of Tech on social media. If you enjoyed the show, please give it a rating or review as it helps others discover the show, and don't forget to share it with your network. For now, have a great day, and I'll see you in the next episode of the Law of Tech podcast. Yeah.